Chapter 26 Family.
Places to visit, number 7. Poetry Island. Although this is, at first glance, a wild and powerful place, by turns beautiful, wayward, passionate, and thought-provoking, any visit longer than a few hours will start to have an exaggerating effect on the senses. Upbeat poems will tend to have you laughing uncontrollably, while somber poems will have you questioning your own worth in a most hideously self-obsessed manner. Early explorers of poetry spent weeks acclimatizing in Walter de la Mare and Longfellow before daring to explore the Romantics.
Bradshaw's Book World Companion, 12th edition.
"Where did you get to?"
asked Landon, as soon as I tapped on the back door to be let in.
"I was thinking you'd gone missing again."
"I brought down the Stilton Easter, was arrested for crimes against humanity, found out where the other Thursdays are buried, was almost kidnapped by Goliath, and was then rescued by the Attorney General."
"Is that all?"
"No. I found out what ghosts are. They're childhood memories. Oh, and the President wants to see me tomorrow to discuss the anti-Smite strategic defense shield. I think it's what the whole secret plans deal is all about."
"Are you sure you're not Thursday?"
"Positive. Hey, listen, Jack Shit's real name is Adrian Dorset. How weird is that?"
"Not weird at all. You and I have known for years. Jack Shit is a daft pseudonym, not to mention actionable."
"Perhaps so, but he wrote The Murders on the Arang Rouge, the book I was asking you about."
"And the significance of this is?"
"I don't know. But the real world's kind of wild with all this strange stuff going on. Although it's a good thing this isn't fiction. It wouldn't really make any sense." "I was becoming quite animated by now. Randomness has an intoxicating effect on the preordained. By the way," I added, "do you want 30 grand? Landon raised an eyebrow in surprise.
"You earned £30,000 this afternoon? As well?"
"From a vole."
"What the... No, I don't want to know. But yes, we could do with the cash, so long as it's not illegally earned."
"Here you go," I said, handing him the crumpled check. I'd have to make good on my side of the bargain, but I felt sure I could drop some toast marketing board references into the series without much problem. "Oh, and if you see anyone who looks like NSA or Spec Ops watching the house, don't be alarmed. The President is protecting us. I don't think Goliath is too keen on me right now."
"Were they ever?"
"Not really, but I know what they're up to, and it's particularly unpleasant. In fact, I shouldn't really hang around. I'll only make things dangerous for you."
"Until we prove you're not my wife," he said, "you're staying."
It seemed like a generous sentiment, so I accepted gracefully.
"Listen," he said, "just in case I'm wrong, and you really are written, you should know something."
"Yes?"
"You know I said I didn't know where she was?"
I nodded.
"That's not strictly true. I didn't know whether I could trust you. You see, when Thursday went to the book world, she always came and went via her office at Acme Carpets. Bowden is the manager over there, and when she went missing, I asked him to go and look for her."
"She wasn't in her office?"
"No. And the door was locked from the inside."
He let this information sink in. She had gone to the book world 4 weeks ago, and not returned.
"So,"
he said,
"if you're not her, it's where you need to be looking. If you are her, it's where you need to go to find out what has happened to you."
I stared at him and bit my lip. Thursday was definitely somewhere in the book world. Lost, alone, perhaps hurt, who knows. But at least I had somewhere to start. My mission, such as it was at least a partial success.
"Well then," said Landon, clapping his hands together, "you'd better meet Tuesday."
So I sat down at the kitchen table and felt all goosebumpy and hot. I'd been less nervous facing down Pot Black, but this was different. Landon and the children were everything I'd ever wanted. Pot Black was just a jumped-up cheesemonger. Tuesday wandered shyly into the room and stared at me intently. "Hello," I said. "I'm not your mother."
"You look like her. Dad says that you might be Mum, but you don't know it."
"That's possible, too," I said, "and I'd like to be."
"Could she be?" asked Tuesday of Landon.
"It's possible, but we won't know until later."
"Oh, well," said Tuesday, sitting next to me at the kitchen table. "Do you want to see what I'm working on?"
"Sure." So she opened her exercise book and showed me a sketch of an idea she'd been having. "This is a sundial that works in the overcast, or even indoors. This is a method of sending power wirelessly using music. And what do you make of this?" She showed me several pages of complex mathematical notation.
"Looks important."
"It's an algorithm that can predict the movement of cats with 97% accuracy," she explained with a smile. "I'm presenting it to Nuffield College the day after tomorrow. Do you want to come?"
Over the next few minutes, she explained her work, which was far-ranging in its originality and depth. My inventor Uncle Mycroft was dead now, and his intellect had crossed to Tuesday. If at age 12 she was working out the complex mathematics required to accurately predict random events, her work when she was an adult would be awe-inspiring. She spoke to me of her latest project, a plausible method to crack one of the most intractable problems in modern physics, that of attempting to instill a sense of urgency in teenagers. After that, she explained how she was designing daylight fireworks, which would sparkle darkness in the light, and then, finally, mentioned the possibility of using beamed electron fields as a kind of impermeable barrier, with such diverse applications as enabling people to go underwater without need for an aqualung, or to protect one from rockfalls, or even for use as an umbrella. "Especially useful," remarked Tuesday, "for an electron field umbrella wouldn't poke anyone in the eye, and never need shaking." After Tuesday had gone off to fetch a photograph album, I turned to Landon. "She's the secret plans, isn't she?" He looked at me, but said nothing, which I took to mean she was. Tuesday's intellect would be the driving force behind the government's anti-smite strategic defense shield.
"I guess we're just about to find out if you're the Goliath Thursday," said Landon. "If you are, you'll be contacting them straight away."
"I wouldn't, of course.
How long do you think before they figure it out?"
"I don't know," replied Landon, scraping the carrots he'd been chopping into a saucepan. "But know this, I'll die to protect my daughter."
"Me too."
Landon smiled.
"Are you sure you're not her?"
"I'm sure."
Tuesday came back with the photograph album, and I joined her as she leafed through the family holidays, of which I had no knowledge. I stared at the Thursday in the pictures and tried to figure her out. She never looked totally relaxed. Not as much as Landon and the kids, anyway. But clearly loved them all, even if she seemed to be glancing around her as though on the lookout for anyone wishing to do them or her harm. There were very few pictures in which she was smiling. She took life seriously, but her family kept her anchored, and probably as sane as she could ever hope to be. Tuesday reached for my hand and held it tightly without really thinking. And as we chatted, it crossed my mind that I could become Thursday, if the real one never showed up. I could go Blue Fairy, and all this would be mine. For a fleeting moment, it seemed like a good, worthy, and attainable idea. but reality quickly returned. I was fooling myself. The longer I listened to Tuesday, the more I realized just how much she needed her mother. Not any mother, but her mother. I would never be anything more than a pale reflection. Landon, I said, when Tuesday had gone off to watch Bonzo the Wonder Hound, Series 12. I shouldn't have come.
Nonsense.
No, really. It was a huge mistake. I can't be her, no matter how much I want to.
You sell yourself short. I'm more convinced by the minute, the way you sat with Tuesday.
Yes?
That's how Thursday used to do it. Proud, loving, but not understanding a single word she said.
Land, I'm not her. I've got no idea what's going on. I didn't recognize Adrian Dorset. I didn't know that you'd lost a leg and I can't see Jenny. I should just go and hide in a large cupboard somewhere until I'm whisked back into fiction. He stared at me for a moment.
I never said her name was Jenny.
Damn. He took a step closer and held my hand.
You saw her.
I nodded. Jenny mentioned Thursday saying Lyle was boring. Does that make any sense to you?
Thursday didn't discuss her book world work with me. She pretended it was a secret, and I pretended I didn't know about it. Same as the Spec Ops work. But I don't know anyone called Lyle, and she hated boring people. Except me.
You're not boring.
I am. But I'm okay with it. I'm the anchor, the shoulder.
And you're all right with the support role?
He laughed. Of course. It's my function. Besides, I love her. More than anything on the planet. With the possible exception of Tuesday and Friday. And I'm actually quite fond of Jenny, too. Even though she doesn't exist.
You're a good man.
He smiled. No. I'm an average man, with a truly extraordinary wife.
I rubbed my temples with the frustration of it. I so wanted to be her and have all this, Landon, the kids. There was a dull throb in my head, and I felt hot and prickly. It was a lot easier being fictional, always assuming that I was, of course. That's another reason I should leave, I said, in a harsher tone than I might have wished. This morning, I knew who I was and what I was doing. Now, I've got no idea. And I started to sob.
Hey, hey, he said, resting a hand on mine. Don't cry. There's 4 hours to go before you vanish or not, and I'm not sure I can wait that long. I'm pretty confident you're her. You called me Land. You saw Jenny. You're a bit odd. You love the kids. But there's one simple way I'll be able to tell.
And what's that?
Kiss me.
I felt myself shiver with anticipation, and my heart, my real heart, that is, not the descriptive one, suddenly thumped faster. I placed my hand on his cheek, which was warm to the touch, and leaned forward. I felt his breath on my face, and our lips were just about to touch, when suddenly I once more felt the hot needles and Klein Blue Wagnerian treacle, and I was back in the arrivals lounge at Juristech. As Plum had promised, there was a glass of water and some cookies waiting for me. I picked up the water glass and threw it at the wall.